You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
I don't know about you, but when I was growing up, my mother taught me not to lie. The Bible tells us not to lie. Revelation even threatens us with eternity in the lake of fire for lying. And yet, our story today not only glorifies lying, but has God rewarding the liars. I'm talking, of course, about a little-known story about a couple of midwives named Shiprah and Puah. Found in the first chapter of Exodus, it is not only morally instructive and delightfully irreverent, it is also a story that is critical to the origin of the Jewish people. Our story is set in Egypt, many generations after Joseph had, according to the Bible, saved Egypt from famine and destruction. A new pharaoh comes to power who did not know Joseph and sees only one thing in the presence of the Hebrews in Egypt, a threat. Now, let me make a quick aside. This whole story is what's called narrative theology. It is set in Egypt and has wonderful characters and situations that form the origin story of Judaism. But it's just that, a story. There is no archaeological or documentary evidence outside the Bible for there having ever been Hebrew slaves in Egypt. Hebrew slaves did not build the pyramids, and Charlton Heston didn't lead the Hebrews in the wilderness for 40 years. It's a great story, chock full of meaning and values, but it just never happened. And remember, my mother taught me not to lie. So you're with me? Okay, back to the story. A ruler comes to power who scapegoats a group of immigrants as a threat and then implements a variety of new policies to make their lives miserable, like that would ever happen in real life. He decides, first, let's set ruthless taskmasters over them. Okay, they're still multiplying. How about making them work more hours to wear them out? Still multiplying. How about genocide? Ah, that's the ticket. So the Pharaoh calls on our heroines, Shiprah and Puah, to carry out his plan. Let's hear how that goes.
Our words of wisdom are from Exodus chapter 1, verses 15 through 21. The king of Egypt said to the Hebrew midwives, one of whom was named Shiprah and the other Puah,
"When you act as midwives to the Hebrew women and see them on a birth stool, if it's a boy, kill him. But if it's a girl, she shall live."
But the midwives feared God. They did not do as the king of Egypt commanded them, but they let the boys live. So the king of Egypt summoned the midwives and said to them,
"Why have you done this and allowed the boys to live?"
The midwives said to Pharaoh,
"Because the Hebrew women are not like the Egyptian women. They are vigorous and give birth before the midwife comes to them."
So God dealt well with the midwives, and the people multiplied and became very strong. And because the midwives feared God, he gave them families. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
Picture it with me. Into the ominous presence of the most ruthless ruler in the known world, who has been systematically trying to exterminate a whole people, and who is about to initiate a campaign of genocide, come bright and shiny. Yep, you heard me right. Bright and shiny. In Hebrew, Shiprah's name comes from the root word for bright, and Puah's name comes from the root word for glitter. What? Yeah. For readers of Hebrew, I think this whole story has a kind of tongue-in-cheek angle to it. Here is the most fearsome and powerful ruler in the whole world who is outwitted by a couple of clever women named Bright and Shiny. And to this battle of wits, the Pharaoh has shown up unarmed. First off, Pharaoh is not woke. Driven by a kind of psychology of hate inspired by irrational fear of the other, he's vulnerable to his prejudices tripping him up. He's also sexist. He thinks boys are more important than girls. That's why he thinks his tremendously stupid strategy for genocide, killing the boys, is so clever. He's killing the ones who are more important somehow. Yet, if you want to truly stunt a people's ability to reproduce, wouldn't you want to kill the girl babies? Then, it doesn't even dawn on him that a couple of women would be smart enough to outsmart him. After it's clear that the boys are not being killed, the Pharaoh calls Bright and Shiny in to explain themselves. They play on his blatant stereotype about those immigrants and their breeding habits, and they say, you know, the Hebrew women are not like Egyptian women. They're vigorous. One commentator interprets the word used describing the Hebrew women not as vigorous, as we find in our English translation, but as animalistic, appealing to Pharaoh's prejudice that the Hebrews are not fully human. After this, Pharaoh loses his patience and just issues a blanket order to all Egyptians to throw any Hebrew boys they find into the river, which, of course, leads to the more familiar story of baby Moses' mom and sister Miriam floating Moses in a basket, only to be discovered and adopted by Pharaoh's own daughter. As Dr. Lisa Wolf, who preached for us during Lent, texted me, oh, the irony! Pharaoh is foiled by a bunch of women, midwives, Miriam, Moses' mom, and Pharaoh's own daughter. Pharaoh repeatedly ordering all the boys to be killed is a clear indication that he doesn't quite have a grasp of who he should really be worried about, the mothers. And here's another angle to consider. It is a not at all settled argument among Jewish scholars as to whether Shiprah and Puah were Hebrew or Egyptian. When the original text calls them the Hebrew midwives, it can be translated as either the midwives who were Hebrew or the Egyptian midwives for the Hebrews. And it actually makes more sense that Pharaoh would have asked Egyptian midwives to do his dirty work and not Hebrew midwives. And if you read it that way, Shiprah and Puah become even more heroic in their having decided to let their humanity override the dictates of their god, the Pharaoh, and side with the condemned children of foreigners. Essentially, they valued the lives of slave children over their own lives. With gracious defiance, what they did was profoundly political, nonviolent protest. As author Francine Klagsbrunn writes, the midwives' refusal to follow the Pharaoh's genocidal instructions may well be the first story of civil disobedience. Back in 2013, I had the privilege of traveling to the Australian capital of Canberra to speak at the Common Dreams Conference of Progressive Christians. Inspired by the story of Shiprah and Puah, the theme of the conference was Midwives of Change, Progressives Shaping Religious Communities. Reflecting on the story of our defiant doulas, Rabbi Aviva Kippen said something that really stuck with me. Sometimes, changing the status quo doesn't mean simply assisting at the birth of something new. Sometimes it means sabotaging the old. She then asked if we aren't conditioned to automatically understand heroes and heroines as positive and saboteurs as negative. But what if, like Bright and Shiny, being a saboteur was a good thing? At every turn, the midwives, Moses' mother, his sister Miriam, and Pharaoh's own daughter sabotaged everything the Pharaoh was trying to achieve, namely protecting the murderously unjust and xenophobic status quo. But the mothers had a different priority, and to achieve it, they lied, schemed, and undermined the highest authority in the land. They were disobedient. They were subversive. As Rabbi Aviva put it, they were saboteurs at the birthing stool. And their willingness to be saboteurs led them to not only resist the twisted expectations of the domination system in which they lived, but to defy a direct order from someone who held the power of life or death over them. By the midwives heeding the call of conscience, one of the boys who survives will be called Moses, and he will lead the Hebrews out of bondage, deliver God's law on Mount Sinai, and bring them to the promised land. And it all starts here, with two women willing to say no to what they knew was wrong. Now, this is a skill set that has not lost its relevance over the years. Pastor David Luz notes that our story opens on a chilling note. He writes, "A ruler, wishing to solidify his political base, identifies a common enemy, a scapegoat to blame for whatever current problems plague society. We've seen this movie before. In the 30s, especially, though not exclusively in Germany, it was the Jews. More recently, it's been, by turns, illegal immigrants, welfare moms, gays, the undeserving poor, and Muslims. Collectively, we human beings have a penchant for defining ourselves over and against the other and denying others their essential humanity. And because it seems like such a huge problem, which it is, there's a temptation to just throw up our hands in frustration and say, well, what do you expect me to do about it? Well, have you ever heard of the butterfly effect? The term was coined by meteorologist Edward Lorenz to explain how small changes can have a big impact on the future. Inspired by the notion, Andy Andrews wrote a book in which he catalogs the extraordinary impact of simple and courageous efforts. It seems like a credit where credit is due kind of project, except when you start going back, it's virtually impossible to tease out what individual efforts contributed most to the final result. Look, for developing the high-yield, disease-resistant corn and wheat responsible for saving over 2 billion lives from starvation, we should credit their creator, Norman Borlaug, right? Or should we credit one-term U.S. Vice President Henry Wallace, who created an office in New Mexico to develop hybrid seed for arid climates and then hired Borlaug to run it? Or should we credit George Washington Carver, who used to take young Henry Wallace for long walks and instill in him a love of plants? Or should it be Moses and Susan Carver, who adopted an orphan boy named George as their son? Or should it be, you get the idea. In today's story, it's Shipra and Puah who sabotage the schemes of a bully and tyrant. And everywhere you look in Jesus' story, he's celebrating the art of sabotage. The Good Samaritan turns the hearer's expectations about who's in and who's out on its head. The parable of the workers in the vineyard undermines the economic status quo. The weed in the wheat celebrates weeds getting into the field and disrupting the monotony of the established order. And of course, that damned yeast completely ruining a whole measure of wheat. Our actions are inextricably interconnected, creating an unforeseen butterfly effect that, who knows, could ripple across time and space to affect the lives of millions. The causes you choose to support, the efforts you work to sabotage, have consequences unforeseen. It isn't a question of whether, but what the result will be. White South African playwright Atoll Fugard wrestled with whether art could really affect positive change in the world. But in the early 1960s, he came to a decision that caused just that. Already under surveillance and restrictions for his opposition to apartheid, he declared that he would no longer stage plays in segregated theaters, forcing his sophisticated white audience to have to either forego his plays or break the law by attending plays in a mixed theater. Although he rejected violence as a legitimate means to ending apartheid, he was not above making people feel uncomfortable about themselves to effect change. In Fugard's words, sometimes the best sabotage is love. Shipra and Pua prioritized their reverence for life and their belief in the worth of every person over their obligation to follow orders. They even lied to the authorities. And according to the last verse of our reading today, God rewarded them for it. But with what? The English translators decided on saying God gave them families, but alas, that's not what the text says in Hebrew. What it says in Hebrew is that God gives them houses. What? Brick and mortar? No, it doesn't make any sense unless you're in on one more thing, that in Egyptian, the word Pharaoh means great house. So, for opposing the great house himself, the midwives were given their own houses or legacies. Pretty sweet. So, on this Mother's Day, remember the saboteurs at the birthing stool, those who may not have been mothers themselves, but who, through lying and deception, participated in bringing to birth a whole new world. I hope that whoever you are, you'd be inspired to carry on the legacy of Shipra and Pua, Jesus, the abolitionists who ran the Underground Railroad, the family who hid Anne Frank, and all the others who've been on about the honorable work of principled lying, undermining justice, and sabotaging the status quo. May their stories be celebrated wherever injustice and prejudice need to be quashed. Be well.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.